So that is Horace Silver, and we heard him doing the tune, The Hippest Cat in Hollywood. And we are listener-supported community radio, WPKN. We're in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and I have a surprise for you. Yes, we have Nina Freelon on the phone. Nina, are you there?
I am here.
Such a pleasure to meet you, and thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, it's my pleasure, my pleasure.
And where are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm in New York City right now, rehearsing with my band, getting ready to come y'all's way.
I am so excited about it. So you're going to be in Hartford at the Infinity Hall on October 4th, and everyone will be really happy to hear that I have a pair of tickets to give away for that, and I'll do that after we let you get off the air. So I just wanted to, you know, I wanted to check in with you. What are your plans for the Infinity Hall gig?
Well, I'm on what's called the Beloved Tour. My husband of 40 years passed away in July.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh.
Yeah, I know, right? That's like a great icebreaker for a phone conversation with somebody you haven't met. But this is actually a joyous celebration of life, actually. He really wanted me to keep singing. He made me promise that I wouldn't sit at home and, you know, grieve and not find a way to be who I am and who he helped encourage and loved me up on the stage and just really was my biggest supporter. And so I am, I think, bravely and humbly coming out here offering some joy and some remembrance and some happiness and joy inside my pain kind of moments, real moments. And I'm thoroughly, thoroughly excited to, because I haven't been to Hartford in, I can't even tell you how many years.
So I have to say, I am thoroughly moved by what you're saying and your bravery and your courage, you know. And also, as I read about your history, you really came to singing somewhat after, you know, really after your children were, I guess, in a space where you could do that. Is that the case?
Yeah. Yes, that is true. And also with the support of my beloved who said, go and do it. Go and do it. You know, these little people will be fine. I got it. He was just such a wonderful, supportive helpmate. And I was 10 years working on my craft, but basically in the kind of home environment with small children, as you can imagine.
No, I can't. So I don't know how you did that. I don't know if I could do that with two dogs.
I'm 35 now, so, you know, thankfully it doesn't last forever. But you know what I liken it to really be honest. I liken it to weaving or doing a kind of quilt, because there are very few women that I know that are able to do just one thing. We're always mixing our care for our parents or our children and weaving our art in the way, and it's just what we learn how to do, be efficiency experts and learn how to make space in our lives for the things that we love, all the things that we love. And so when people ask me, well, how do you balance? Well, I don't balance, nor do I try to balance. I just try to be where I need to be at the time and recognize that I have my my loves in a lot of different areas, and that's okay. It really is okay. And our kids grew up under theater seats. They are now very fabulous, friendly, open-minded, artsy kids who are now artsy adults with children of their own and exposing their own children to the arts because of what they learned growing up in our crazy, fun, sometimes not that organized household.
Well, you've been incredibly successful doing it. 6 Grammy nominations. You started off with Ellis Marsalis, I understood, as your, which is, I mean, and how did that happen? How did you even meet him?
I was at a Southern Arts Federation jazz forum. And they called on artists from the region, that's North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama. They picked different artists to come and showcase, and then we were adjudicated by these incredible artists. And Ellis Marcellus was one of them.
Oh my God. Were you scared to death?
Scared to death.
Yeah.
Scared to death. Shaking. I just can't even explain to you how awesome that moment was. And after I did my adjudication and he gave me some really wonderful things to think about, he asked if he could accompany me at the jam session. He asked.
Oh my God.
I was over not only the moon, Jupiter and Saturn and Uranus and all the rest of them. It was the beginning of a friendship. And it's not like he lauded me with, oh, you're so fantastic. He really was kind of hard on me. He was like, look, you need to listen to this one and that one. I think he heard certain things in my voice that he felt had promised, but he wasn't going to let me off the hook with having a good voice or even having the beginnings of a good voice. He pushed me. He pushed me with love, and I will forever, ever be grateful.
Well, I am certainly grateful that he did that. We just got done playing one of your tunes, What a Little Moonlight Can Do, from your album Blueprint of a Lady. This was Sketches of Billie Holiday, and it's just lovely music, lovely music. And is she a guider for you in your sound? Who has motivated you in terms of the female vocalists in jazz?
Well, Billie Holiday is the grandmother of all jazz vocalists. Between she and Pops, Louis Armstrong, there was no such thing as a jazz singer per se prior to these luminaries, these titans in the world. And so growing out of the blues tradition, you found these voices that had unique phrasing, that had the blues in them, but weren't necessarily classified as blues singers. And so my inspiration from Billie is the ability to be who you are. Like, she didn't have an incredible range. She didn't have a lot of the things we associate with really great voices. But what she had was an intimacy and a musical personality that was so her, that was so identifiable as Billie. She invented herself. And that's the inspiration that I get from her, is go out there and be who you are. Learn from everyone and then incorporate that into your own human life experience. I mean, Billie responded to the age and the era that she came from. Baltimore, Philadelphia, mm-hmm. a grimy town at that time, a port town, an orphan. Pretty much, living on her own, scraping her way, singing in happy houses, and determined not to be what the world thought a black woman could be at that time. And she invented herself in a most marvelous, incredible way. Yes, there were bumps and bruises on her road, but that's the truth for all of us. And that's my inspiration. Vocally, I wouldn't say so much. You could hear too much Billie in my particular voice. You might look to Ella Fitzgerald, mm-hmm.
Sarah Vaughan
more than Billie in terms of the voice itself. But there's something to learn from all of the singers that come before us.
Mm-hmm.
From Carmen McRae, we can learn some things about phrasing, about the ability to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
From Blossom Deary, we can learn that you can have swing, heavyweight swing, with a little chirpy little voice, with a mm-hmm. happy voice, and knock you dead, hit you right in the heart.
I'm so glad you went there, because that's exactly what I think about her. Every once in a while, I'm just blown away again. She has a big catalog, and I've listened to some of her work, and I've been, wow, that is kind of, how did she get away with that, right? Right.
And there's a lot of humor in that voice, a little wry
for sure.
Sense of slyness. And this is what attracts us, I think, to jazz vocalists, is the musical personality. is the identifiable moments that you hear that voice and you're like, I know who that is. Mm-hmm. Dinah Washington, there was no one like her.
And I could say the same thing about your voice, absolutely. When I hear it, I know it's you. And but, you know, I wanted to just really quickly tell you a story about Cambridge, Massachusetts, and then ask you a question. So because this is where you were brought up, right? And yeah. So I went to a concert, and it was a Gershwin concert, and it was full house, you know, probably about 200 people in there. And they were inviting people to come on the stage just impromptu and sing. Right? Any Gershwin tune, right? The first person gets up there and the entire audience, everybody in the audience starts singing with, you know, knew all the lyrics. And I thought, gee, what the heck would it be like to grow up in a place like this where people are so darn smart, right? So what kind of influence did that have in terms of, your development and all of that?
Well, Cambridge was a place, you know, the whole town and gown thing. Well, first of all, if you decide that you want to sing the American Songbook, you just better get ready for everybody to already know the tune.
Right.
That's why they call them standards. And so you had better have a command of the material. And if you want to take it somewhere else, you better take it there with some kind of authority and with a musicality because every other version is living in the world. It's in people's souls. It's in their experience. And so your version is running parallel to the versions that people have known and loved. And they are judging you, you know, as this sounds great or not so much. And so, you know, one thing that I can say, you know, coming up in Cambridge is the exposure to the arts in all forms, not just music, but dance and theater and even, you know, poetry and lectures. And a lot of these things are free because there's Harvard and there's MIT and there's Wesley College and there's Simmons College. And there's all of these great institutions around that are bringing people in. And if you read the paper, you can go and get exposed to a whole lot of stuff. Well, all of these things add up in your sort of personal library, whether it's music or poetry or ancient Persian mystic speakers. It's all something that fills up your well with information, with love, with beauty, with all of that. And so I'm just really, really blessed that I had a mother who dragged us to everything.
Good for her.
Cultural. Whether we wanted to go or not, she was non-negotiable, and I'm really, really grateful for that because it allowed me a wider worldview and a love and appreciation for arts and all of its forms, visual arts included.
So, and I'm so glad you did that because we can hear that in your voice. We've been speaking to Nina Freeland. She is going to be at the Infinity Hall in Hartford, Connecticut on October 4th. And I have tickets to give away. I'm going to give her an immense thank you for her time and say that I can't wait to see you. I don't know if I'll get to see you in Hartford or I'm going to try and get to Dizzy's, which is a little tiny bit more convenient for me. But either way, I can't wait to hear you sing.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I'm super excited, too, and I'm super excited to see. I've got lots of friends in Hartford, so I hear. So I expect to see them.
Amen.
At the Infinity Hall.
Amen. Thank you, and have a wonderful afternoon.
Thank you, love. All right.
And we are on listener-supported radio, WPKN. It's in Bridgeport, Connecticut, 245. On a Tuesday, and you heard, I know, we have tickets. So we have tickets to give away to Nina Freeland. She's going to be at Infinity Hall in Hartford, Connecticut. So when you're calling about that, and I only say this because every once in a while someone calls and I'll say, okay, it's in Hartford or it's in New York, and they're like, oh, I don't know about that. So if you cannot go to Hartford on October 4th, which